This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Carm Capriotto here, your pioneer of automotive aftermarket podcasts, and my guest today is David Giles, a partner in All EV in Nova Scotia, Canada. Yep, you heard that right. His two-location business only services electric and hybrid vehicles. This is a fascinating business model and one that makes EVs a specialty. Now, that's no different than Euro shops. With OE commitments and government mandates to roll out EVs and reduce the production of the ICE, the internal combustion engine, we all need to be schooled in the what's next indoctrination. It is time to look ahead before you get left behind. David Giles discusses how his electric and hybrid-only business has become a huge success up in Canada. Keep in mind, progress is impossible without change. Hey, thanks to our partners Apex and Shopware for providing this episode, with registration now open for Apex 2021 in Las Vegas. You can already feel the excitement building for this year's homecoming. I can't wait to reconnect, see you, meet with all of you in person. The date's November 2nd through the 4th, 2021. Be there. Register now at AAPEXshow.com. Hey, when was the last time you heard a customer say, "Thanks for taking my money"? Well, get Shopware, shop management software, and your customers will be shouting it from the rooftops in overwhelming five-star reviews. Learn more on the web at GetShopware.com. Another great episode as it relates to the future of EVs is episode Remarkable Results 661, Cut Through the Fog on the Future of Electric Vehicles with Derek Kaufman. It was a great episode and worthy of probably another listen for you. We work hard to bring you real conversations on topics that we believe are important to you. Please recommend the podcast to a friend. A warm welcome to Dave Giles, the Vice President of All EV Canada. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Carm. How you doing?
I'm great, my friend. I want everybody to say, all EVs? What the heck is this all about? Oh my. And it's in Canada, yes. And I'll even throw another interesting curve. It's in Nova Scotia. And so, you know, yep. you think of Nova Scotia, you think of, you know, the ocean, you think of, you know, farmland, East Coast, you know, I don't know, you got mountains up there?
A few, not mountains, maybe big hills.
You don't think of a big metropolitan area, you think of a, you know, just a big, beautiful part of Canada. And, you know, then my next question is, are there any EVs in Nova Scotia? And of course, there are, which is what our topic is about. Dave has got a very interesting background, and I want him to share it with you here in a minute. But at the end of his name, he's got a couple of professional designations. And, you know, I have to tell you something. I just love what Canada does with licensing up there. Dave Giles, RSE, tell us what that is.
That's a red seal endorsement. So as a technician, as even in a trade, you become red seal certified. You get that designation. So the red seal.
Excellent. And then comma AST.
And that stands for automotive service technician.
Yeah. And because you've gone through your license, it's amazing what Canada has done. And I love the word technician. It doesn't say automotive service mechanic. It says technician. Love that part. Love that part.
Yeah, yeah.
So when Dave and I got together and we had our pre-call and we talked about this, I'm doing episodes on EVs. We have a bunch coming out. We've done a town hall on it. There's so much going on in our think on where's EVs coming to. And Dave, I have to tell you something. I thought of who one day is going to come up with an all-electric business model.
It didn't take us long.
It didn't take you long. I know you have partners that are helping you, and we want to really get into a whole bunch of great stuff that I know he's going to talk about. But your background, trainer, right?
So I started with, a long time ago, I started with a company called BC Training, and was basically helping licensed technicians get back into the trade using technology. So like fuel injection, OBD2 was being introduced back then. So this is back in the 90s, and then 2000s, I went to SPX Corporation working for Robinair and OTC products. And then from there, I got hired on with CarQuest, was working with the Technical Institute. Doing their training in Eastern Canada, then moved on to the community college, and at community college down here, Nova Scotia Community College, doing customized training, apprenticeship training, doing a lot of truck and transport, and obviously electric vehicles. A lot of interest in Atlantic Canada, with technicians becoming somewhat familiar with the vehicles. And then about a year ago, I jumped ship of the college and basically started my own company doing all EV.
Wow. Amazing. And your other partners, do they have the background you have? Are they on the business sense of it? What do they do?
Yeah. One of the partners I'm with initially was Jeff Farwell. He's the CEO. He actually owned a company called Ambassadors, and some people may recognize the Harbor Hoppers. They're amphibious Lark 5 vehicles, U.S. military, that have been converted over to tourists, vehicles that would go in and out of the harbor, hence the name Harbor Hopper. I got involved with Jeff through a research innovation project. They were going through brake pads. Nova Scotia does have hilly, being a basin city, it's pretty hilly. So these machines were burning through brakes once every 2 weeks at a cost of about $6,000, with lost revenue and cost of parts and the rarity of these machines. So they reached out to the NSCC Community College, which I was at, and they were looking for a solution on the braking. Since I'm heavily involved with electrical electronics, I came up with a driveline retarder using a Telma unit that uses electromagnetic braking, and they installed one under a research grant, and that machine never used this another set of brake pads.
I love the credibility that you bring to this business model, and I'm not surprised. But what I am surprised about is that I'm finding this out, and it's in Nova Scotia. And then I said to Dave as we were talking, I says, "Well, what if you took this to Montreal or Toronto?" He says, "The business model changes absolutely because because there's a whole lot more access. There's more people, of course, in a metro city like that." So Dave said, listen, if we were going to do this, we had to do this right. We had to live within the hedgehog concept.
So the hedgehog concept is a concept where you're good at one thing, you do it, you excel at it. Why deviate from that? And what we're really good at here is electric vehicles. We know them, we understand them, we build them in a sense. We are very intimate with the vehicles in the sense of we take them apart. We build training aids for our own centers that we can take to car shows and so on, so people can learn about them. So, you know, so the hedgehog concept comes back to this is what we're really good at. Why would we do anything else? So last September, we made the transition to no more gas vehicles. No gas vehicles enters into our 10,000 square foot facility. So hybrids are okay. So we made a little bit of a shift saying that as long as the vehicle has over 100 volts in the vehicle, then we would service that vehicle. But other than that, any gas vehicles do not enter into our facility. We do take trade-ins here since we are an automotive dealer as well. But those trade-ins are usually sent directly to auction. So
okay. And I think that's important to explain to our listener, that you sell cars, EVs, you'll take vehicles in on trade, ICEs leave and go to get either traded or sold somewhere else. If an EV owner comes to you and says, "Hey Dave, I've got this, you know, this Infiniti TL," and you know it's gas, it's ICE, do you send it out to get repaired then?
Yeah, we usually have a relationship with other shops around the area. So if I do get a customer, a lot of customers have a gas-powered vehicle as their second vehicle. So obviously, you got to understand a lot of the EV customers we have, which are topping over 500 customers now in the Atlantic region here, is they appreciate what we're doing. So they appreciate the fact that we are all EV. We don't do anything else but electric vehicles. And so if I send, you know, somebody comes and says, "Hey, I got a gas leak in my Acura or something," and I would say, "Oh, go see this guy over at this shop. He's great. You know, I have a relationship with them. They'll take care of you." And likewise, so the shops down there, they haven't really got into the EV. They're a little apprehensive. So what they'll do is they'll send those customers to us. But, so that's kind of the trade-off we're doing right now. But I'm really encouraging shops as an educator myself is to make that transition, to make that the leap to start accepting electric vehicles and start servicing them, learn about them. It's no different than fuel injection was to carburation back in the 80s. So, it's just another transition. So,
if I owned a Prius and I wanted to buy a used EV from your lot, would you take my Prius in?
Yes, I just did one yesterday.
Would you put that Prius back up on the lot to be sold?
Not typically, no. That Prius would be sold usually at auction we use a platform called TradeRev, and we just put it up and another dealer will bid on it and we'll send it off to them, so...
You are attempting, or you are, being so true to being the electric car store.
Correct. That's exactly what we are. We want to be EV, BEV, battery electric vehicle only. And just to give a highlight, we have two locations, two dealer lots, one in Charlottetown, PEI, one in Nova Scotia, and we have an inventory of over 60 electric vehicles.
Wow. So you have two locations. As far as the business plan, the business model, any more stores planned?
Oh, definitely. Hence our name says we're all EV Canada, but right now we're definitely looking into moving into two more provinces very, very, very quickly. Definitely the growth is here. It's happening. It's happening faster than we could ever predicted. And a lot of people I talk to don't, when we first opened was last January, just before the pandemic hit, and a month later, everything shut down and we've been in business for a month. And so we've survived and grown through the whole entire lockdowns, everything that's been going on, and it's been amazing. So the way we look at it is that if we can survive through this, I can't wait to see what the future holds for us. So
anybody who's listening is probably saying, whoa, that this business plan, this business model is like 8 years too soon.
Well, with the announcements of government and everything that's happening now with the industry and consumers are now adapting and seeing the convenience and the performance and the range of these EVs and manufacturers are pushing them and, then getting onto the environmental side and, people are walking in right off the street and trading in their car and buying an electric car and they don't turn back. And that's the amazing thing is that, I've worked for auto shops and dealers in the past and, you'd always sell a car and you always have, somebody come back, there's a squeak or something like that, or, they can smell coolant or, the gas leak or, or transmission's not shifting right. These cars don't have any of that stuff. No transmissions. They don't have fuel. So when we sell the car, it's actually a really great experience, both for the sales staff as well as the consumer. They're buying a car that's very few moving parts on it, so there's less likely to fail. And they really enjoy the vehicle, the convenience, the performance, and so on with the vehicle.
So people are coming in with their Prius, their hybrid, and they're trading it in for a BEV, battery electric vehicle, right?
Yeah.
Do they also understand and appreciate that you also will repair that vehicle as they continue to use it? So you're a one-stop sales and service?
Yep, we have six bays here. We do everything. Like we have alignment equipment. We have our full service bays. We have a battery rebuilding shop. So on those older Priuses and the Nissans, the Altimas, Chevy Tahoes, the Dodge Rams, ones that ran with the hybrid with the nickel metal hydride batteries, we're heavily involved with rebuilding them for other shops as well. So and we've done Nissan Leafs. We're listed as one of the Nissan Leaf battery modification centers in Canada. So we do battery, battery rebuilding, testing. We do lots of different things with batteries. We work closely with Dalhousie University with their, what they call the RES lab, which is the Renewable Energy Storage Lab. And that's where Jeff Dunn is also out of. He's with Dalhousie University, and Jeff Dunn is a Tesla battery guy. So that's actually in Nova Scotia as well. We have a lot of things in Nova Scotia that people don't realize, like Surette Batteries is up in Amherst, Nova Scotia. We have Jeff Dunn's lab with Tesla, about 2 miles from here. Then we have the Dalhousie University's Renewable Energy Storage Lab that's heavily involved with wind turbines, and yeah, just a lot of things that are within Nova Scotia that people don't realize that really relate to electric vehicles.
Well, fascinating. That's a motivator to be around all of that. Question: how many Teslas on your lot?
Right now, I probably have on our Dartmouth lot. I should actually look out my window, but I'm going to say there's probably about 15. I have about 15 Teslas out there now, Model Xs, Model Ss. I have performances, Model 3 performances. I have Model 3 standard range, long range. So yeah, I have about 15, at least 15 cars just on our Dartmouth lot.
Will people come there for miles to buy the car?
We just sold a car to Newfoundland, so we have a Model X going up to Newfoundland actually today. Around 4 o'clock, it's being picked up. We sold them to New Brunswick and others. We even sold a couple to even into Montreal and Quebec. People have come down and bought them from us and taken them back. So
you're accessed online. People can shop on the website.
Yep, our website is active. We try and keep it going. It's tough because cars are moving. It's amazing, the amount of cars that we do move through here a week with our two locations. So we actually have people that are involved with just our website. They're keeping it updated, our marketing, our Instagram, our social media stuff. So it's sometimes it's best to always tell people, look at our website. Check out our website. You'll see our inventory there. Usually it'll say where the cars are. We have a lot of incentives in Atlantic Canada now. So we get rebates on vehicles when you purchase one. So if in Nova Scotia we give $2,000 on a used electric vehicle, and new PEIs $5,000 with a free charger, and New Brunswick has just launched theirs. This is $2,500, and that really does help with the sales of the cars. So
good, including used.
Yeah, it includes used. Yes.
Tesla, can you actually work on them? Can you actually get parts? Can you get access to data? Help us understand, if you've broken the code, how did you do it?
Well, it's called relationships. Just like I said, I work with other dealers in the area, other shops. Tesla sees us as an asset because they don't have a service center in Atlantic Canada. We work with their road rangers as well. We don't do any warranty work, but I do have the ability to service and repair Tesla vehicles. No problem. I can purchase parts normally. The things that we're restricted on is on scan tool, access for diagnostics. But once you learn Teslas, they're not as difficult as people think. They're really, really advanced in the sense of how they do it. So I think a lot of hype is, it's a American vehicle, technical vehicle, very complex, hard to work on. You need specialized tools and scan tools and programming. You'd be very surprised. I've been asked to do a conference in Orlando in next March, and one of the courses I'm going to be doing is servicing Tesla vehicles outside of Tesla. So, and showing, some of the things that you can learn about, and be able to easily do your customers' vehicles. It's, once again, it's just education. Once you learn it, then it's you're like, wow, that's no different than every other car. There is certain things that you need to know so you don't brick the car and cause some damage to it. But in the everyday servicing of those cars, it's no different than any other car.
So I need to buy a part for Tesla. You were telling me such an interesting story that they, of course, won a VIN code in order to buy the part. How'd you get around that?
So a lot of times Tesla will do it by VIN number only. And when they you order a part for that customer's vehicle, the VIN is recorded, and the customer will actually get a copy of the invoice that a part has been purchased on their vehicle. So we get, like, obviously we'll buy the part, we pay for the part, we purchase the part through one of the service centers, we bring in for the customer. So we really create a very easy experience for that customer, but they also get notification on the part as well.
And they know what you paid for the part.
Correct. Yes. They know what they paid for it. Yeah.
So the margin on the parts is non-existent. So are you covering your profitability with a higher labor rate?
Yeah, totally. No, we mark up the parts. We let the customer know that the parts will be marked up, and they have no issues with it. That's fine. They understand the business model. A lot of parts, you gotta realize Tesla, like most manufacturers, they don't make the parts. A lot of the parts are sourced from other manufacturers. So once again, it's just figuring out what those parts were actually off of. Like brake pads for Model X are actually from a Ford GT 500. So those are some of the things that that come out with that. So, like, you know, so once you start to learn, you don't need to buy the parts directly from Tesla. You can actually get the aftermarket parts for them too as well.
So you believe that aftermarket suppliers may one day start cataloging this and or cross-referencing OEs to their part?
Yep, totally. Like, you know, definitely. It's already starting to happen. As a little tip out there, if you get a Model S in and has a blower fan gone, it's actually a blower fan out of a Hyundai. Hyundai Santa Fe. So the blower fan is actually the identical part number, everything from a Hyundai vehicle. So once you start to see those parts, and once the part suppliers start to realize the cross-referencing of those parts onto these vehicles, then it's, you know, then they'll start listing it under their catalogs. So we're starting to see that now. If you go into some of these catalogs, you'll start to see brake pads, brake rotors. You know, they're starting to cross-reference and figuring out that they do work. These are the same parts from these other vehicles. So
I could only think of the word Frankenstein.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny when one of my techs is putting on, just for example, because we just did one the other day, I'm putting a blower fan off of a Hyundai onto a Tesla Model S Performance. It's like, you know, and she was like, you know, that's, she goes, this is a Hyundai part going onto a Tesla. You know, so it's, but you feel a lot, like even get into a Tesla, because Tesla is always the big hype around everything. You'll see a lot of similarities, like the Mercedes-Benz shift lever is what Tesla uses for their park neutral drive, and you know, so those are some of the things that you start to see cross-referencing of some of these components. Not all components, but for the most part, Audi parts, Ford parts, Dodge parts, Chrysler, we see this all these different cross-references, Hyundai, you know, others as well.
Carm here, and did you ever think about driving an electric truck? Keep listening. With registration now open for Apex 2021 in Las Vegas, you can already feel the excitement building for this year's homecoming. Now, I can't wait to reconnect with all of you in person and share stories of our time apart, both professional and personal. And I also can't wait to sit in on the technical and business management training specifically for you, the service professional. With more than 20 sessions, you'll hear from the best of the best, including Mike Reynolds, who will lead training on ADAS for the diagnostic technician, and Jeremy O'Neill, who will lead a class on selling the invisible service solution. Make sure to also experience the new repair shop HQ and Joe's Garage. It's designed with you in mind. And visit the show floor to see many new products and emerging technologies. The dates again, November 2nd through the 4th, 2021. Be there. Hey, register now at aapexshow.com. I want to let you in on a little secret. Investing in a cloud-based shop management system could be the smartest purchase you make in 2021. Manual processes can really add up and cost your shop unnecessary time and money. Now, if you're writing out repair orders, you're wasting time. If you're chasing customers for approvals, you're wasting time. If you're manually calculating invoices or logging into multiple systems, you're wasting time. And if you're wasting time, well, then you're wasting money. Do me a favor, pull up Chrome, Safari, or whatever browser you use and type in getshopware.com. Click on the Book a Demo button in the upper right corner and check out Shopware's amazingly efficient software. Trust me, you won't regret it. Again, that's GetShopWear.com. I would imagine because of green and electric vehicles and government mandates that if you open up an all EV shop and you went out to the press or the TV stations, they'd be all over you.
We've been in the media quite a bit. It's in fact, my partner, Jeff, who owned Ambassadors with the Harbor Hoppers I mentioned earlier, he had over 500 employees. They owned restaurants. They owned Ambassador buses, which was about 120 buses. And he says he's never been in a business, and his was a tourist business. He's never been in a company that got so much public or so much press to the public, ending costs, anything. He says it was mind-blowing. Like, every week we're getting calls. Like, even last week I was on CTV News about the new iDev vehicle I just built. And, these are the things that are constant. We got a Auto Electric Trucking magazine contacted us. They want to do an article on us as well, too. And it's just been constant throughout the years. In fact, our website, we do have a media section where we show it, and we actually just stopped updating it. It was just so consistent. But the message is always the same. That's one thing we always find is the message is always the same with bringing in electric vehicles into Atlantic Canada and the adoption of electric vehicles to the consumers and trying to get rid of some of the myths around electric vehicles. And that's why our sales staff is not called, we don't call them salespeople, we call them educators. They're our EV educators, because selling a gas-powered vehicle, I sell, if somebody comes in and wants to buy a trade-in vehicle, it's like 5 minutes. They come in, they like it, great. They take a quick drive, come back, they buy it, away they go. Electric vehicles, a little different. You got to talk about charging, talk about range, how do they work, how they're going to work in the winter, how they're going to work in the hot summer, So those are the questions that our sales guys usually have to, go through with the customer. And sometimes it could be a couple hours, if not days sometimes, just to give that, answer all their questions, so.
You bring up such a great point about range, about am I going to consume my battery when it's 0 degrees up here in Nova Scotia, and on and on. Give me some of, again, you're doing a needs-based selling. So what do you need the car for? Let me make sure that we get you the one that's going to support your lifestyle and your needs. What are you doing to get around with some of the range issues?
Well, the range issues is really you buy the most range you can afford. And I've had actually people, I tried talking them into buying a specific vehicle, saying they said, no, I only need it for 50 kilometers each way. This car will be perfect. I'm okay. But one thing you got to realize about electric cars, a lot of people that say that they don't drive a lot, they just need it for driving back and forth to work. Once they start driving their car, they love them and they wind up driving them more. And so one of the things I always say is, make sure you buy as much range as you can afford. We have some cars here now with over 550 kilometer range on them. And we have cars here that have as low as 100 kilometer range. So in, 60 miles to 400 miles is kind of the range that we have. And it really comes down to price as well, too. The more range obviously costs more just because of bigger battery, but Nova Scotia is actually an ideal place, and Atlantic Canada is actually an ideal place for electric vehicles. And one of the things I saw a couple of years ago, which really made me push into, jumping ship with the college and going and opening my own company, is heat pumps are really, really popular in Atlantic Canada. And heat pumps work within a specific range. If it gets really, really cold, like if we hit minus 20, 25 degrees, heat pumps aren't really that efficient. And if it gets really, really, really hot, once again, it strains of it. We live in a perfect environment for our temperatures here. So, seeing that means that, we live in a very moderate type of winter. We don't get super cold. In our summers, we don't get super hot. So electric vehicle range, definitely in the wintertime, you do lose some range because, once again, the battery's heating itself and, some of the loss of range from just the cold. But the thing is that in the most part, they do really well. Like, the mid-range vehicles, like the Bolts, the Konas, the Leafs, and that do really well in Atlantic Canada. Canada. So, in fact, in PEI, they're probably the most popular are the lower range vehicles.
Really? So, give me an example of a model that would be a lower range vehicle. Would it be a Leaf?
Would be like a Nissan Leaf or a Kia Soul. So, you know, 150 kilometers, so miles, about 75, 80 miles. That's a low range one, and then of course your higher range ones are up into your 550, 600 kilometers, and that's Tesla territory. So
how are you guys overcoming the recharge issue? Are people buying units?
Yeah, so the chargers, yes. Pretty much the biggest thing with electric vehicles and ownership is a lot of, I'd say probably about 98% of the people that come in own their own homes. So they're charging at home, you know, 99% of the time. It's a home charger. In fact, Nova Scotia Power, the power supplier here in Nova Scotia, actually had a program. They would give you a charger, install the charger, and give you $250 a year for 2 years credit on your account for having a charger on your house. So it's a no-brainer. You get a free charger, they install it, and you're part of their program. And their program is really about controlling the charge rates at nighttime. So, you know, everyone gets home at 7 o'clock at night and plugs their cars in, and industry's still running. It will put a load on the grid. So what they do is you plug your car in, you tell them you want to charge by 7 o'clock in the morning, and they manage that. So over the night to ensure your car is charged at 7 o'clock. So, you know, and then we have a huge infrastructure of DCFCs, fast chargers and level twos in the province. So I think we're up to almost 350 to 400 chargers now in Nova Scotia. So it's quite substantial. We do only have one Tesla supercharger that has, I think, 8 stations at it, and there's 2 more opening up this year. But I, like, you know, a lot of times we don't, in Atlantic Canada, a lot of times the chargers, like the DCFCs, are found at like the Petro Canada stations, the gas stations, ironically, are the ones that mostly have these charger stations now. Is like, it's to leapfrog you. It's like really about, if you're going on a trip, if you want to go to, you know, Montreal from Halifax, and you're going to use the DCFCs on the highway, but you're probably not going to go to a DCFC, you know, to go charge your car and take it back home again, like a conventional gas station, because essentially the gas station now, your fuel station, is at your house. So you don't actually have to visit a fueling station anymore.
Dave, I am so, I mean, I'm sitting here just, I don't even know what question to ask next, because I'm so intrigued by your incredible knowledge. But you just mentioned level two. I sure don't know enough about that. How expensive is a level two charger?
Surprisingly, you can buy a level two charger, like, I don't want to give any exact numbers, but $1,000.
What's so unique about it? Why is it called level two? What does it do?
So level two, there's 3 different types of charging on electric vehicles. So level one is your 120 outlet. You plug into your regular household outlet. You know, it's a slow charge. It's like a trickle charge. It's AC charging. So that means that the level one, in fact, stepping back a second, the boxes that you see that people have on their homes and things like that, those aren't actually chargers. They're actually switch boxes. The chargers are built into the vehicles. The chargers live in the vehicle. So it's like, I use this example. It's like when you go to charge a battery on a vehicle, like a 12-volt battery on a vehicle, you plug your charger into the wall outlet, and then you take your positive and negative cables and you hook them onto your 12-volt battery, and that box that's actually taking AC voltage, converting it to DC voltage, is your charger. Well, electric vehicles, that lives inside the vehicle. That charger box is inside the vehicle. The extension cord that goes from that box to the 120 outlet is the cable. And in fact, the only difference they do with the chargers, people call them, that they put them on their house, inside that box is a switch. So it ensures there's no power going to the vehicle to turn on that charger that's inside the vehicle until it's deemed safe to do so. So when you plug in your car at home at nighttime with that cable, the J1772 or whatever, you plug it in, it basically communicates to that box and tells that box, hey, we're plugged into the car wants me to turn the charger on, give me power, then it turns the switches on, closes them, they're GFI protected, and basically the charger turns on, turns on the charger, which then turns the AC voltage into DC, which then charges the battery. So level one and level two are both AC style charging. Level three is what we call DCFC, which is direct current fast charging. And that's like using a booster, boosting a vehicle, going from a 12 volt system to another 12 volt system. So, that's DCFC. It's very fast. It's really quick. But the thing is that it's harder on the batteries. So, and that's why they say DCFC is not recommended for daily charging. It's more or less for trip charging. So
we're going to be going on a trip. So I'm going to be looking for a place that has a DCFC so that I could stop and quickly plug in and have a cup of coffee or three and maybe possibly get topped off.
Yeah, so you definitely don't want to be going on a trip and plugging into a level one, level two charger all the time. So you'd be there for hours. but the thing is with DCFCs, you're on a trip, you stop, you go to the washroom, you grab a cup of coffee, you come back, you're there 15 minutes, you now have, maybe 30-40% more charge in your vehicle. You jump in your vehicle and you drive to the next location. You'd go another 150, 200 kilometers, you stop, you get back out, somebody has to go to the washroom, whatever, you go sightseeing. A lot of these chargers are at destinations that you can actually, maybe a mall or something. You go in, you're there for half an hour, you come back out, you got it. So they're not meant to sit there and fill your tank completely. They know how far the next charger is. And that's kind of how they plan these chargers, especially the fast chargers. Tesla is really good at it. Tesla will plan your whole route, tell you how long that you need to be at each charger. It'll tell you what time you'll arrive at the charger, and it will only charge you up enough to get you to the next charger so you can charge there and keep going.
So there's a charger easy button on the Tesla. I get it. I'm swiping my card when I walk up to a level three charger, right? I'm swiping my card and they're going to charge me X.
Yeah, that's right. They usually charge by, down here, they charge by the hour. So some places charge by the minute, depending on where you're at. You're prorated as well. So if you're only at the charger 15 minutes, then you only charge for 15 minutes of time from that $15. It's $15 an hour at a DCFC here, like an aftermarket one, or an aftermarket one after like a flow charger or a charge point. But basically, 15 minutes, it's your charge, it'll be like $4 or $5 and off you go. So,
That just made me think about, how many miles per gallon that we get in our ICE vehicle. And is there any kind of stat about the money that I spend on electricity and how many miles I get?
Well, the way you look at it is that here in Nova Scotia, our power rate is 16 cents a kilowatt hour. So there is what we call there's a savings plan that you can go on, and it's a little bit cheaper. But I use that just that's fair. So it's 16 cents a kilowatt hour. So if right now I've done a couple tests, I've gone with a couple Teslas. I've done about 11 to 12 kilowatt hours per 100 kilometers. So you're talking less than $2 to go 100 kilometers in a gas or an electric vehicle compared to a conventional gas-powered vehicle. Right now, our fuel prices in Nova Scotia are $1.40 a liter. And if I take a fairly reasonable vehicle, like 7 liters per 100 kilometers, you're talking almost, 3 to 4 times the cost to go the same distance with gasoline as you do with electricity.
I have to have some clarity on level one, level two that I could have at my home. And all you're really saying that it is the switch that I'm paying for.
Yep, you're paying for the cable to unlock the charger, essentially. It tells to send power to the charger through that connector, the J1772.
So when say for example, I put up a level two switch at my home, I have a Tesla Model S. Anyone who's listening that has a Model NS, they get this, but I don't because I don't have electric vehicles. I haven't been down this road yet, so that's why I'm so curious. And so if I put this level two on my home, do I have to have a direct run to my electric box? Does it have to be, is it 220? Is this just a normal 30-amp fuse? Give me some background.
Yeah, so level one, you run it on a normal 20, or level one, 120 volt, 20 amp circuit, ideally. And then your level twos are a little more, it's pretty much like a dryer or a stove plug, same type of circuit. We call them NEMA 1450, so which means 14, like, you know, your 50 is your size of your amperage. So it's a little bit bigger cable. It depends on how fast you want to charge your car, too. So with a level two charger, you know, the bigger the charger, the bigger the amperage, the faster you'll charge your car. So a lot of people usually go with it just to answer your question there. Yeah, they're usually around a 40 to 50 amp circuit breaker dedicated in your panel to the charger, just as if you would have a dryer or a stove. And then, and people always ask me, well, how long does it really take to charge my car? You know, what is the time it takes? I said, it takes 5 seconds to charge your electric car. And they go, 5 seconds? I go, yeah, you get out of the car, you plug it in, you go inside for the night, you come out, car's fully charged, you unplug it, going back to the car, it takes 5 seconds. So, you know, so that's the difference. Whereas I've done a study, actually, I do some fleet service presentations. And one of the things I said, okay, I did a couple examples of vehicles that had about 200,000 kilometers on gas, depending on the size of the tank. It was a 50 liter tank. And I said, like, you know, and how many times they would have to fill that tank based on the liters per 100 kilometers they get on the vehicle, which is miles per gallon per 60 miles. Anyways, and then I put that in there, and it was surprising for them to travel 200,000 kilometers on that vehicle based on its fuel economy. Not that the cost was significant, but the time that their staff actually have to go to a gas station to fill the vehicle, stand there holding the trigger, going in to pay whatever, you know, it was almost about 2 weeks to try to do that. So that's 2 weeks of late wages to basically fill a car for traveling 200,000 kilometers.
Your opinion of, you know, where the trucks are going, you know, for example, the Ford F-150 Lightning. I mean, did they, in your mind, get the fact that they can tow and have a decent range on these vehicles? What's your opinion of that?
Yeah, I think the towing capacity, nothing beats an electric motor. Like, I'm a hot rodder by nature. I've had big block Chevelles, big block Mustangs. I've drag raced. I've, you know, I love modified cars. I just, like, think they're so cool. I love torque. And really, at the end of the day, nothing beats the torque of an electric motor. Even today's super and hyper cars are going hybrid. So to go into a truck platform, it's logical because the torque is there. The bottom end, the pulling, towing is instant with electric motors. So, and then the platform of a larger vehicle, they can put bigger batteries in them, more batteries, which will give extended range. So I think that I believe that the truck market will explode with electric trucks coming in. There's going to be a lot of interest, a lot of trucks that go to sites that, you know, are doing short trips all the time. You know, I think it's just going to be, I know down here, there's like everybody's waiting for the E-150 to come out, the Rivian, the Tesla Cybertruck. I know lots of people have deposits on these vehicles. So, like, you know, so I think it'll be interesting to see once they start coming out. And I know a couple of contractors out here, and they're very, very interested in the E-150. So, and they were diesel guys. I was actually really surprised when one of them called me up and says, like, you know, when do you think that E-150 is going to be available? I'd really like to get one of those trucks. So I'm like, oh, wow. Like, you know, so.
I'm old enough, Dave, to know when Ford called their E-150 an Econoline van. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here. Fascinated with your knowledge, your passion about this. Would you come back anytime you've got some really neat, cool things to share about all EVs?
Oh, definitely. I love talking electric vehicles. I think sharing information, however works for somebody. And I definitely, I'd definitely be super interesting coming back. As well as if anybody wants to contact me through our website. It's allev.ca. And, you know, my number's there. And I take calls from all over Canada and the U.S. So
thanks so much, Dave Giles from All EV Canada out there in Nova Scotia with this incredible business plan for the electric car store, all EVs. Thanks, man. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much, Carm. Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.